This is listener-supported public radio, KDLL FM 91.9 in Kenai. And welcome to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, with the news of all things beer here in Alaska. Hope you like our new opening song, Beers of Alaska by Recess Duty. We'll have news items, an interview with Zach Henry of St. Elias Brewing Company, a feature report on whose beer you're drinking, a report on the Kolsch style, and of course, our regular segment on beer gear. So let's get started with some news items. Midnight Sun Brewing Company has received label approval for a new flagship beer called Wolf Pack Pilsner. This beer was selected by drinkers at the brewery as the best version of a Pilsner and will be offered in cans beginning in October. It's currently available on draft at the brewery and around town. The beer will have 5% alcohol by volume and 34 international bittering units. Denali Spirits, a division of Denali Brewing Company, has released its gin and vodka in 375 and 750 milliliter bottles, so you can keep an eye out for that around town. The Culmination Beer Festival, held each year at Anchorage Brewing Company, has now put tickets on sale. This year's festival will take place on Saturday, July 29th, from 2 to 6 p.m. at the brewery. Tickets are $100. If you're interested, check out the Culmination Festival website, but move fast because over two-thirds of the tickets have already sold, and this festival typically sells out each year. Kenai River Brewing Company has changed its operating hours from noon to 8 p.m. for the summer. Both the tap room and kitchen will be open during those hours. The experimentation with lupulin powder continues. As I mentioned in an earlier show, this hop powder is produced from whole leaf hops using a cryogenic separation process that preserves all chemical components. The purified lupulin powder contains most of the resin compounds and aromatic oils derived directly from whole hop flowers. It's ideal for use in the whirlpool or fermenter for imparting intense hop flavor and aroma with minimal vegetal flavor and improved yield. Anchorage Brewing Company held a second release of its Lines Double IPA on June 9th, while Girdwood Brewing Company is using this powder in its Fairy Dust Session IPA to be released with this year's Girdwood Forest Fair. The Fairy Dust will be on tap at the fair's beer garden July 7th through July 9th. The rate of decline in global alcohol consumption is accelerating, according to recent studies, with the global market for alcoholic drinks shrinking by 1.3% in 2016, compared with an average rate of 0.3% in the previous 5 years. Beer saw the biggest decline, with consumption dropping by 1.8% in 2016, compared with a 5-year rate of 0.6%. The global trend is a reflection of developments in three of beer's largest markets, China, Brazil, and Russia, which all saw steeper declines than in previous years, declining at 4.2%, 5.3%, and 7.8% respectively in 2016. Beer sales in the U.S. have also declined, while domestic craft beer sales have risen, indicating that the sales of mass market domestic lagers have been taking the losses. St. Elias Brewing Company has been nominated for the 2017 Fans' Choice Award for pizza places. The winners are based on the number of quality reviews received to the Fans Choice webpage. James Roberts, who has been writing a beer column in the Anchorage Press under the pen name Dr. Fermento for 20 years, has begun writing a new column entitled Beer Frontiers for the online magazine Crude. You can find his new stuff at www.crudemag.com. Through its so-called global disruptive growth group, ZX Ventures, Anheuser-Busch InBev has acquired a minority stake in Rate Beer, one of the most popular and reputable beer ratings and resource websites in the world. But the deal isn't exactly new. In fact, it closed this past October following 8 months of talks. It went unannounced, however, to both the public and Rate Beer stakeholders because the two sides wanted to, quote, get points on the board to prove the value of the partnership without the disruption of making it public. Terms of the deal were not disclosed. Reaction within the craft beer community was swift and negative, with several craft breweries, most notably Dogfish Head Brewing, with CEO and founder Sam Calagione posting the following on the brewery's website. Quote, "We are troubled by the announcement last week that ZX Ventures, which is fully owned by the global conglomerate Anheuser-Busch InBev, has purchased a portion of Rate Beer. We believe this is a direct violation of the Society of Professional Journalists Code of Ethics and a blatant conflict of interest. The SPJ's Code of Ethics includes a section called Act Independently and includes the following guidelines. Avoid conflicts of interest, real or perceived. Disclose unavoidable conflicts. Refuse gifts, favors, fees, free travel, and special treatment, and avoid political and other outside activities that may compromise integrity or impartiality or may damage credibility. Be wary of sources offering information for favors or money. Do not pay for access to news. Identify content provided by outside sources, whether paid or not. Deny favored treatment to advertisers, donors, or any other special interests, and resist internal and external pressure to influence coverage. Distinguish news from advertising and shun hybrids that blur the lines between the two. Prominently label sponsored content. It is our strong opinion that ABI's ownership of Rate Beer and other properties positioned to cover the craft brewing community like October and thebeernecessities.com is in direct conflict with multiple guidelines listed above. To that end, we have respectfully asked Anheuser-Busch InBev and Rate Beer to remove all Dogfish Head beer reviews and mentions on the Rate Beer website immediately. It just doesn't seem right for a brewer of any kind to be in a position to potentially manipulate what consumers are hearing and saying about beers, how they are rated, and which ones are receiving extra publicity on what might appear to be a legitimate 100% user-generated platform. It is our opinion that this initiative and others are ethically dubious and that the lack of transparency is troubling. To our fellow independently owned brewers, we encourage you to join us in this effort to ensure consumers continue to get the best and most accurate information about their beers. For everyone else, we encourage you to shift the sharing of your beer opinions and reviews to another platform that remains loyal to the principles of journalistic integrity. America's Independence Day is just around the corner. Support the indie craft brewing movement." End quote. As of now, Rate Beer has not removed Dogfish Head nor any of the other craft breweries requesting removal from its website. King Street Brewing in Anchorage has just broken ground on a new brewery. Opened in September of 2011, King Street is currently in a rented location at 7924 King Street, and its rapid growth in the last few years has it straining at the seams, so a new building was the next logical step. The new building will be located at 9050 King Street, with the entrance off 91st Street, a stone's throw from Anchorage Brewing Company. The brewing area in the new facility will comprise about 10,000 square feet of the 18,000 square foot building. The new brewery will be three stories tall. The brewery side will essentially be a single story. There will be a catwalk for customers to come through and overlook the brewing operations. The tap room will be on the east side. The second level will be unoccupied for a while, and plans on that space will evolve after the brewery opens. The third floor will be an event room and some offices. The brewery's current 10-barrel brew house will also be replaced with a new and bigger system from Premier Mechanical. Plans are always subject to change, but the target date for opening the new facility is March 1, 2018. Alaskan Brewing has expanded its distribution to Iowa. Beer drinkers in the Hawkeye State will soon be able to get their hands on an award-winning beer from the Last Frontier, as Alaskan Brewing will be on tap and on the shelves in Iowa this summer. Alaskan is partnering with Johnson Brothers Distributing to bring a variety of brews made from their glacier-fed waters of Juneau to the heartland. In a surprising way, this reestablishes a 30-year link that the founders of Alaskan Brewing have with Iowa. Co-founder Jeff Larson was mentored by the staff at Millstream, a craft brewery in Amana, Iowa, where he worked as a short-term visiting brewing apprentice in 1985. Quote, "Iowa was where I brewed at a commercial level for the first time. Those were exciting days early in my brewing career, learning from excellent craftsmen and getting to know and appreciate the hard-working ethic of the people of Iowa. Their passion for their community and their work has left a lasting impression on me," said Larson. Iowa marks the 19th state of distribution for Alaskan. Alaskan Brewing has also announced a new beer for its rotating Alaskan sampler pack, Alaskan Cream Ale, which is following the Spruce Tip IPA and Gold Creek Ale. Alaskan is inviting customers to give feedback on its website about all of these beers. That wraps it up for news. We'll be back in a moment with an interview with Zach Henry, the owner and brewer at St. Elias Brewing Company. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier at KDLL FM 91.9, Kenai, Alaska.
IPAs, ales, and stouts, pilsners, porters too. Microbrew, homebrew, any craft you choose. Look before...
This is Drinking on the Last Frontier with your host, Bill Howell, on KDLL FM 91.9 Kenai. We're here at St. Elias Brewing Company to interview Zach Henry, the owner slash brewer of St. Elias. So first off, thanks a lot for having us in, Zach, and thanks for the beer, man.
You're welcome. No problem.
So, first question I got for you. What makes a brew pub better than a brewery?
I guess with the brew pub, it's a little different because everything is served on site. So we have 12 different beers on tap, and we've got 10 bright tanks that we're serving off of. So it's a little bit easier in some respect because you transfer the beer over, you carbonate it, and it stays there until it's gone. So there's not a lot of transporting kegs around and having to worry about cleaning kegs and stuff. So it's a little more simple, I guess.
And everything stays under your control. So I'm sure as a brewer, that makes you feel good because you know it's being treated properly.
Yeah, exactly. So like a packaging brewery, they'd send out kegs to market, and you never really know if they're like sitting in a warehouse at 80 degrees or, you know, and what's going to happen once it leaves the brewery. The good thing here is like once it goes in my cold room, I know I've got complete control over it. If something goes wrong, I messed up. So
tell us a little about your brewing operation here and what your typical brew cycle looks like.
Yeah, so we've got it's a 7-barrel system. I'm eking out probably closer to like maybe 9 barrels. Especially in the summertime, just trying to ramp up and get as much as I can in a tank because the tourists are cranking through the beer pretty fast. But I've got, five Cilindro conical fermenters, and then I've got two bright tanks that I use for carbonating, stuff like that. Yeah, we do, I don't know, probably around maybe 600 barrels a year, something like that.
And all of that sold right here on site, so.
Yeah, everything is sold here. We can legally sell up to 5 gallons per person per day for takeout. We do a fair amount of kegs, but most of our sales are by the pint.
Speaking of barrels, tell us a little bit about your barrel aging program.
Sure. So we like to kind of mess around with different barrels. We'll get, you know, wine barrels, red wine, white wine, brandy, bourbon, rye, whiskey. We've tried a lot of different barrels, and each barrel, it'll give the beer a distinctive character based on what was in the barrel, you know, before it was emptied. It's a lot of fun. A lot of stuff we do is some like sort of lambic style not true lambic, but so lambic style at Belgium is famous for, it's a, I guess, a wild yeast. It's called Brettanomyces. It's in the air. Over in Europe, they'll brew these beers, and instead of sending it over into a fermenter with a yeast strain, they'll send it up to the top floor, and it'll cool overnight in big shallow pans. They open the windows, and the air that cools it also inoculates it with wild yeast, Brettanomyces, and then probably a cocktail of different bacterias that contribute a sour character. And the Brettanomyces is a super tenacious yeast that's slow working, but it'll just eat through every bit of sugar in a beer. So basically, we'll buy the yeast strain that's been, I guess, captured from that area and then propagated, and so we'll buy it and inoculate a beer with it.
In your barrels?
In the barrels, yep.
Well, you just recently, or last year, if I remember right, you were over in Belgium on some sort of a beer pilgrimage. Would you learn what was that like?
I mean, it was pretty cool, actually, just kind of traveling around. We went through Belgium, and then the trip ended in Germany. Actually, Oktoberfest, we hit that. It was really cool. Belgium was pretty interesting. They're famous for a lot of pretty strong beers. It's not definitely not beers that you can sit and drink three or four of them, because they're pretty high in alcohol. So we were kind of wanting to get over to Germany, where the beers were a little more respectable, alcohol percentage, 5%, where you can have a few more.
Where do you see St. Elias in 5 or 10 years? You've been open for 9 years now, so you've got quite a track record. So what are you thinking for the next 5 or 10?
I think right now we're pretty content with where we're at, with what we're doing. We're all pretty happy, and we're just trying to make this thing run, the best that we can. We're always, trying to make things better, whether it be like the kitchen side, the food side, or the beer side. But yeah, I could see maybe getting into canning at some point. We're looking at a crowler. We kind of missed the boat a little bit. We were going to get it in the spring for summer, but now summer's here and it's too busy. So I think we're going to probably wait till after summer, and then we'll start kicking out the crowlers.
You got any thoughts about SB 76, the new proposed change to the licensing?
I definitely am for a simplification of the beer laws, because it's hard to understand, especially as a newcomer coming in, new breweries opening up, trying to figure out what the laws are and try to get a straight answer from the, when you talk to the ABC board in Anchorage, sometimes you have a hard time getting a straight answer. But definitely for the simplification of beer laws, where we could just have a brewery license, everybody's kind of under the same umbrella, and then you can do add-ons, I guess. If you want a restaurant, you do an add-on. I would say probably I'm in support of it.
So what's your favorite among your flagship beers?
Flagship beers? I would say probably the Czech Pils. That was one that we brought on. We had a Kolsch for a while, and it was good. It sold well. But I would say my favorite is the Czech Pilsner. I like lagers are just pretty special. They're a much slower process, and the yeast kicks off some really, really neat flavors that you don't get with ale yeast. And I'm a big fan of Czech Saaz hops. There's a few different Pilsners out there that are pretty tasty. I really enjoy Pilsner Urquell, and so we were trying to recreate a beer that was similar to that, and it's just a good beer. I mean, it's low enough in alcohol, you can have a couple of them. It's a kind of a good working man's beer, I guess.
Yeah, they go good in hot weather and pair really well with lots of foods. The style we're talking about this month is Kolsch, and you used to brew a Kolsch as one of your flagships. So to talk a little bit about that style and what you think of it?
Sure. Yeah, so Kolsch is a style of beer that brewed in Germany and Cologne. And technically, you have to be able to, we visited and went around and tried all the breweries around this. There's this church there, and legally, you have to be able to see the church in order to call your beer Kolsch. So it's kind of a neat little niche, I guess, style that is brewed only in that region. And it uses a yeast that's kind of, a lot of people say it's like a hybrid. So it's an ale yeast, but it you actually ferment it a little cooler, so you get cleaner flavors that are more typical and like a lager. And it's really light, but pretty special for sure.
So when you sampled it in Cologne, did it taste like your Even Keel Kolsch?
You know, it was similar, but I think the yeast strain that they're using, I don't think that the yeast strain that I was using was the same as what they're using. So I think there was definitely a little difference.
If there was one thing you could say to everyone who walks through your front door here, what would it be?
Yeah, I guess, you know, just educating people on like that beer is made to be consumed fresh, and you kind of, it's kind of similar to fresh baked bread, you know, it's like there's no comparison between a white loaf, you know, from Fred Meyer's versus something that's artisan baked, you know, with a sourdough culture, and it's made to be consumed fresh. It's not really designed to hang around for a long period of time, but I think just educating people on drinking good fresh craft beer, locally produced.
Another question, what's the favorite beer of all the beers you've ever brewed?
I did a Saison that I really enjoyed. That's a kind of a neat style of beer. Another Belgian, sort of a farmhouse style of beer. Yeah, the Sunfire was pretty tasty. I bring a lot of seasonals back. A lot of times it's just because we're kind of in the mood to drink it ourselves. So it's like, let's make this, you know. We got Green Giant Double IPA is super popular here. I enjoy that one too.
Why don't you explain for the listeners exactly what you mean when you say farmhouse style ale?
Sure. Yeah, so I guess my understanding is like the Saison was originally brewed in Belgium for the farmers would make this beer based on whatever grains they had available, and they would water all of their servants or people that are working on their farms. There's pretty broad interpretation as to what goes into a farmhouse ale, but you can literally add just about anything. I think what makes it distinctive is the Saison yeast strain.
Speaking of these beer names, how do you come up with the names for your beers?
You know, sometimes it's easy, like it just comes to me or comes to my sister Jessie, and then other times it's like I don't even know what I'm gonna name it. I'm about to put it on, and it's like I better figure out a name really quick. But sometimes it can be fun, but sometimes it can also be kind of a burden.
So what do you like most about being a brewer, and what do you like least?
I like the creative aspect for sure. Like as a brewer, it's kind of cool because there's a lot of creativity. And then, you know, there's also mechanical issues. So if you're mechanically inclined, it gives you a pretty good smorgasbord of things that you can do, you know, between fixing and welding things, and then also just creating recipes from scratch. It's pretty fun. I guess the thing maybe I like least is just the constant monotonous cleaning, because it's, you know, a lot of times brewers are kind of referred to as glorified janitors, and so there's a heck of a lot of cleaning that goes on, and that gets a little monotonous.
So Zach, why don't you tell us how you got into brewing in the first place?
Well, I guess my story's probably a lot like 90% of the brewers out there. My wife bought me a homebrew kit. I'd always wanted to make beer when I was 21, and started making beer, didn't have a clue what I was doing. Looking back on it, I'm sure it was terrible. I was putting bread yeast in there trying to get it to go, and it was a little bit of a nightmare. But over time, I just kept brewing at home and refining, and then getting more interested in the science of it and reading books, and kind of decided that I wanted to open a brewery. And my wife and I were living down in Nashville, Tennessee, and she was going to school, and I was just kind of fumbling around trying to figure out what I wanted to do, working at a welding shop and just still home brewing, and kind of came up with this dream to open a brewery, to move back to Alaska, because we both knew that we wanted to live here. So I pitched the idea to my dad, and who lives here, and he happened to have a piece of property that he had just bought. It was sort of an investment property, and I told him about the idea, and he thought it sounded good and told me to get through school and we'll talk, you know. And so I went through the American Brewers Guild program, which was awesome, and then right after that I got on with a brewery in Nashville, Yazoo Brewing Company, and worked for 2 years for Linus Hall. And then from there, moved back up, and my dad and I started putting our heads together and came up with this design, and we pretty much did everything. I mean, it was a treed lot. We cut all the trees down. We built pretty much everything in here. The two of us built, and then later on, my sister came on board, and she started out with helping with the servers. She's kind of moved into more bookkeeping and stuff. So it's kind of a family thing now, and it's pretty cool. I mean, just to have the whole family sort of working together and getting along all right and making beer. It's fun.
So how would you, Zach, how would you describe the biggest difference between being a home brewer and being a, quote, real brewer, commercial brewer?
Yeah, it's almost easier to some extent as a commercial brewer because the brewery's all set up. Everything is designed for the purpose of making beer, where at home normally you're jerry-rigging something, you're pulling hoses out and clamps, and it's a lot more simple, I think, just having everything here, all the equipment and things like that. Other than that, I mean, it's just a much larger version of home brewing, pretty much. I kind of still feel like a home brewer. I still listen to other home brewers and their advice, and I'm always willing to learn.
Looking to the future, have you got some sort of something you haven't done yet, but that you would want to, like a style that you want to explore, or a type of beer, or anything along those lines? Have you got some dream for the future, some particular beer you'd like to make that you haven't ever gotten around to it, maybe with some unusual ingredient or something?
Yeah, we just actually bought some spruce tips from a guy that was selling them locally here. We're going to make a spruce tip beer here probably in the fall, and that'll be my first spruce tip beer. Stuff like that's pretty fun. It's just we're the unknowns, and it's a learning process. You know, I can learn something from it. Kind of look forward to brewing that one. Other than that, I've tried a lot of different styles. I kind of find I come back to the ones that seem like they work and people like them. I guess every place you go, there's different palates. You know, I see like a big change even with in the summertime, the tourists come, and suddenly certain beers that don't normally sell that well in the wintertime, in the summer, they're selling like crazy.
So talk to us about your ingredients. Is there any challenges that you face? Everybody who lives in Alaska knows how expensive shipping is. So have you faced any real challenges getting your ingredients that you need up here?
It's not too bad. I use a couple different suppliers. I use Brewer Supply Group and Cargill Malt. Most of my malts are coming out of Europe. Just kind of a big fan of the European malts. They've been growing, you know, the barley for the purpose of making beer for a long time, and they've got it dialed in. But there's consolidators down in Washington that brings all of these different grains in from, you know, all over the world. And I guess the hardest thing would be maybe time. It just takes, you're not going to get something in 2 or 3 days. It's going to be, you know, a week. And so you really got to think ahead. You get behind, and especially in the summertime here, if I get behind on a grain order, it's, man, it can really set me back.
Speaking of ingredients, a couple of years ago, you actually brewed a beer with locally grown hops, as I recall. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, that was kind of a fun one. Lasse Holmes from Homer, he was involved in a hop growing operation in a greenhouse, and picked a whole bunch, brought them down, and it was kind of fun. We got together with Kenai River Brewing Company, and we brewed a beer over there, and then we came over here and we brewed a beer, and we did two different types of beers. I think they did a pale ale and I did a pilsner, and yeah, it was kind of nice just using the locally grown hops, and the beer turned out really, really well.
Well, hey, thank you very much, Zach. Really appreciate you taking the time to answer our questions, and I hope you continue to have a really good summer here based on how busy you've been. Every time I've driven by lately, I'd say you're doing okay, but the Reds are just coming in now, so you'll probably pretty soon you'll be absolutely hip deep in people.
Absolutely. Yep. Thanks, Bill. I appreciate it.
Stay tuned, folks. Our next feature will be Who Brews Your Beer? This is Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai. Welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL FM 91.9 in Kenai, Alaska. We're asking, whose beer are you drinking? When I first became interested in drinking good beer some 30 years ago, choices were simple. When you walked into a store, you were faced with just three categories: the giant domestic brands, Bud, Miller, and Coors, imported beers, and, if you were lucky, a couple of what were then called microbrews, but which today we would call craft beers. In those days, the problem wasn't recognizing craft beers, it was finding them at all. Fast forward to today, and things are very much different. Beer choices have expanded tremendously as the number of breweries has skyrocketed. Walk into a Fred Meyer, Brown Jug, or Oaken Keg, and you'll be confronted with literally dozens, if not hundreds, of beer choices, many of which are true craft brands. Complicating your choice further, there are also many other brands which look like they are produced at small, independent breweries, but are actually being produced by the same megacorporations that churn out Bud, Miller, and Coors. It seems the managers of these corporations have been watching the same trends as the rest of us over the last few years. They've seen craft beer's market share grow at the expense of their flagship brands, so these Goliaths have developed a multi-pronged approach to fight back against those pesky Davids and their oh-so-tasty beers. The first prong might be called, if you can't beat them, imitate them. In the last decade, we've seen the big breweries release numerous beers that, to the uninformed consumer, give every appearance of being craft beers. Watching a commercial for the Belgian-inspired Blue Moon Wit beer, you will never hear mention that it's actually produced by Coors in the same giant industrial plants that pump out Coors Light. When the Leinenkugel family touts their Summer Shandy beer in TV ads, they neglect to mention that they sold out lock, stock, and barrel to Miller back in 1988 and are being paid merely to shill for something they no longer actually produce. Anheuser-Busch joined the party with its line of Shock Top beers, whose labels never hint at who is actually producing them. Here's what the Brewers Association, the not-for-profit trade association dedicated to small and independent American craft brewers, had to say about this issue back in 2012. Quote, "The large multinational brewers appear to be deliberately attempting to blur the lines between their crafty, craft-like beers and true craft beers from today's small and independent brewers. We call for transparency and brand ownership and for information to be clearly presented in a way that allows beer drinkers to make an informed choice about who brewed the beer they are drinking." End quote. Not surprisingly, this call for transparency has not been answered by the mega brewers. The second prong of the assault against craft brewers might be called, if you can't beat them, buy them. The huge brewing companies have gone on an unprecedented buying spree, snapping up formerly independent craft breweries left and right. This began with the purchase of Goose Island Brewing, a well-regarded brewery and brewpub in Chicago, by Anheuser-Busch InBev in 2011, and shows no sign of stopping. At Anheuser-Busch InBev, these purchased craft breweries are housed in a division known as the High End. Established in 2015, the High End includes brands such as Stella Artois and Shock Top, along with formerly independent breweries Goose Island, Blue Point, 10 Barrel, Elysian, Golden Road, Virtue Cider, Four Peaks, Breckenridge Brewery, Devil's Backbone, Spiked Seltzer, and Carback Brewing Company. Just last month, AB InBev added the Asheville, North Carolina-based Wicked Weed Brewing to this portfolio. Founded less than 5 years ago, Wicked Weed had already earned 7 medals for its beers at the Great American Beer Festival before being swallowed up. Craft brewers are understandably concerned that the overall goal of these purchases is to confuse consumers as to what constitutes a real craft beer, thus propping up the slowly declining mass market beer brands. With its recent purchase of SAB Miller, AB InBev now produces 48% of the beer consumed in the United States, yet Goliath still seems to fear these tiny Davids and their beers. So what do you do as a consumer? Well, the first thing you have to decide is, do you even care? There are those who would say that it doesn't matter who makes your beer or where they do it. They would argue that we should judge a beer solely on its taste, appearance, and price, a pure cost-benefit analysis, if you will. They would contend that other concerns, like independence and locality, are extraneous and can be ignored. I understand and respect the logic of this argument, but I do not agree with it. For you see, I care where my beer comes from for the same reason I care where my food comes from. Just like food, I believe locally brewed beer is fresher beer, which means better beer. I believe beer produced in small, independent breweries is more interesting than and superior to beer produced in giant industrial plants, just as I believe wild salmon is better than its farmed cousin, and that the meat produced by free-range livestock or wild game is far superior to that churned out by factory farms. Furthermore, as an Alaskan, I think buying goods produced in our state, whether Alaskan-grown produce or locally produced beer, is much better for our economy than simply sending our dollars outside, like the colonial territory that we were for so long. But if those concerns don't sway you, then you can stop listening right now, as the rest of this segment will mean nothing to you. Assuming you do care and are still listening, the next logical question is, what do I do about it? First, the good news. Every brewery currently operating in Alaska meets the definition of a small, independent, and traditional brewery as established by the Brewers Association. So long as you're buying a beer brewed in Alaska, you don't have to worry that you're secretly helping to support a giant Belgian-Brazilian brewing colossus with designs to crush the entire craft brewing industry. Perhaps someday AB InBev or Molson Coors will turn their sights north to Alaska, but that day has not come yet, so that part is easy. Things become more challenging when you consider purchasing a beer from outside. As mentioned above, it can be extremely difficult for the average consumer to stay informed and keep up with the seemingly constant stream of acquisitions. I'm a professional beer journalist, and even I often have trouble. In fact, it's this difficulty that the mega brewers are counting on with their confuse and conquer strategy. Fortunately, there is a clever technological solution to this problem, one which I'll be discussing in this month's Beer Gear segment in a few minutes, so stay tuned for that. In conclusion, I want to remind you all that the decisions we make as consumers, when aggregated together by the free market, will decide what sort of beer choices we will have available in the future. In effect, each dollar we spend represents a vote for one thing or another. If enough of us are willing to vote with our pocketbooks for small, independent, and local breweries, and if we can keep the politicians who have been bought and paid for by the big brewing companies from screwing things up with anti-craft regulations and taxes, then we can all continue to enjoy a vibrant and exciting world of real craft beer. I intend to do my part. Do you? We'll be right back with our next segment on the Kolsch beer style. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL FM 91.9 Kenai.
Beers of Alaska, beer on the last frontier. Beers of Alaska, learn about them here.
Welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL FM 91.9 Kenai. This month's beer style is Kolsch. Kolsches are another good summer beer, so it's appropriate for this time of year. A Kolsch is a top-fermenting local beer style from the German city of Cologne. Kolsch beers are characterized by a lightly fruity yeast note in aroma and taste, as well as a pleasant hoppy bitterness. Brewing in Cologne can be documented back to at least 874 AD. In the late 1880s, with the imported Pilsners from Bohemia making inroads into local markets, the Cologne brewers decided to fight back with a pale beer of their own. They would make the beer golden and hoppy, like the Pilsner competition, but continue to use a warm fermenting ale yeast. The modern Kolsch was born, and the Pilsner invasion was stopped at the gates of the city. Since 1998, Kolsch has been a controlled appellation, joining the ranks of such regional European specialties as Bordeaux, Chianti, and Champagne. This means that in the European Union, only brewers from Cologne may use that name to describe their beers. In the bars and cafes of the city, it is served in the traditional Stangen glassware, a tall, straight glass holding 6 ounces of beer. The Stangen glassware is carried to tables in racks containing several glasses. As each glass is so small, patrons must order constantly to keep fresh beer on the table. Despite it being tightly controlled in Europe, the style of beer is widely brewed by American craft brewers, who tend to see it as a pleasant bridge from bland industrial lagers to more flavorful traditional beers. While they use ale yeast, Kolsch beers are usually fermented at colder temperatures, typically between 59 and 68 degrees Fahrenheit. The resulting beers have a low malt aroma with a grainy sweet character. A pleasant, subtle fruit aroma from the fermentation, apple, cherry, or pear notes is acceptable. A low floral, spicy, or herbal hop aroma can also be present. Overall, the beer's flavor profile is fairly subtle, but is generally balanced, clean, and fresh. These beers have an average alcohol by volume of 4.8% and between 18 and 30 international bittering units. These beers typically pair well with brunch-type foods, quiches, and omelets. The sweet malt offers a delicate, toasty counterpoint to the richness of the eggs, butter, and cheese. If you're looking to try a local version of the Kolsch, Evenkeel Kolsch is produced at St. Elias Brewing occasionally, and Alaskan Brewing Summer Ale is also in the Kolsch style. It's light, and it works very well in the hot days of summer. That's it for this month's Beer Style. We'll be right back with Beer Gear. This is Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai.
Well, don't settle for the first, for it might be the worst. Cleanse your palate before you quench your thirst.
Beer. Welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. This is Bill Howell, your host here on KDLL FM 91.9 Kenai. For our last segment this month, let's talk beer gear. As I mentioned in the earlier feature segment, many of the craft-looking beers you see at your local grocery store are actually made by the same assembly line multinational beer conglomerates you see advertised nationwide. So to help you distinguish the real craft breweries from the macro-brewed imposters, there is now an app called Craft Check. Just scan the barcode or search by brewery name to instantly find out whether the beer you're looking at is an authentic craft brewery or just a crafty imitation from the big guys. Craft Check uses the Brewers Association definition of an American craft brewery and holds information on thousands of craft breweries with new entries added every week. Background updates ensure the app is always up to date for new breweries, buyouts, and changes in the beverage industry. And the best news is, it's absolutely free. So if you have a smartphone, download Craft Check app. You can also find more information about it on www.craftcheckapp.com. As I said, it's absolutely free, so if you have a smartphone, there's no reason not to have this app. The other thing in beer gear I'd like to talk about this month is a company called Corksicle. Their website is www.corksicle.com. That's C-O-R-K-S-I-C-L-E. And they offer several interesting items for the beer and wine lover. First off, they offer something called a decapitator bottle opener for $19.95. And this is a very cool bottle opener. It basically looks like a cylinder that you just press down over the top of a regular crown cap bottle, and it pops the cap off very smoothly. So it's kind of cool if you have a lot of bottles that you need to open. Another thing they offer is called the Arctic Can Beer Koozie for $19.95. This is similar to a standard insulated beer koozie, with the exception that the bottom of it screws off and contains a gel pack, which you can freeze and then screw into the koozie, and it will keep your beer or whatever you're drinking cold for a considerable period of time, since it basically has its own little built-in chill pack. So if you're kind of the person who uses a lot of beer koozies, spends a lot of time outdoors in the warm summer weather, this might be something you want to look at. A final item that they present, which is also very cool and is brand new, is called the Chilsner. This is an in-bottle drink-through beer chiller. Basically, it's a tube that, once again, you freeze and then insert into any standard size bottled beer, basically a long neck 9 inches tall. And as you drink the beer, it will be chilled You can drink through the top of this Chilsner, and the beer is chilled before it hits your mouth. It's perfect for parties, tailgatings, or pretty much any occasion where you're out and you're drinking out of a beer bottle and you want to keep what's in the bottle cold. It's $24.95 for a two-pack. Any of these three would probably make a great gift for somebody out there who is a beer lover. That's the Decapitator Bottle Opener, the Artican Beer Koozie, and the Chilsner, all available from www.corksickle.com.
Up next, we've got a submitted question. So, Bill, how should you store beer to keep it at its optimal condition?
Well, that's a good question. You know, you have to keep in mind that there's two different things involved. There's storing beer, and then there's cellaring beer. Storing beer just means you're trying to keep the beer in really good shape until you're ready to drink it. Cellaring beer is like kind of like cellaring wine. It means you're trying to allow the beer to change and mature before you're drinking it. So let's talk about storing beer first. If you're storing beer, the most important thing you can do is keep it cold. The temperature that a beer is at directly affects how rapidly the chemical processes that cause the beer to deteriorate happen. The colder you keep the beer, the longer those processes are going to be delayed. So that's why it's important, if possible, that you get beer that has been shipped cold and kept refrigerated in the beer store, in the sense that that beer will be the freshest beer possible when you take it home. It's important that you also keep beer out of the light. The ultraviolet rays in light react with the chemical compounds in beer, specifically some of the hop compounds, and it literally produces the same chemical that's in skunk spray. So if your beer tastes a little bit skunky, that's because it's been exposed to ultraviolet light, and the chemical compounds in the beer have started this breakdown. That's why most beers are sold in amber bottles rather than green bottles or clear bottles, because the amber bottles better protect the beer inside from light. Obviously, cans are even better than bottles in that respect, because the can is perfectly opaque, so you don't have to worry about any light reaching the beer inside the can. Several companies, even if they bottle their beer, the cardboard packaging they use will completely cover the bottles. If you've ever seen those kind of cartons, those are designed, once again, to help protect the beer from light. So those are the rules for storing beer. Keep it in the dark and keep it cold, and that will help preserve the beer for as long as possible. Now, if you're going to cellar beer, you have a slightly different set of criteria. Because you want chemical processes to take place in the beer, you don't want to have your beer cellar, wherever you're keeping your beer, to be cold. You want it to be cool. Optimal cellar temperature, most people would say, is between 50 and 55 degrees. You also want your temperature to be stable. It's actually better for the beer to be at a constant, slightly warmer temperature than it is for the temperature to fluctuate between cooler and warmer. Beer that's being cellared doesn't react well to temperature fluctuations. So your goal is to have a nice steady temperature. Whether you achieve that in your basement or having an insulated box in a closet or whatever you do, that's what you want to strive for, is a steady temperature somewhere in the 50 to 55 degrees Fahrenheit range. The other thing to consider when you're cellaring beers is not all beers are suitable for cellaring. Typically, for a beer to improve with time, it would need certain factors. One, it needs to have enough alcohol so that it'll stay preserved. The typical rule of thumb is 8% or more. The second thing to remember is the first thing that deteriorates when beer is stored is its hoppiness. So you seldom see anybody cellaring, say, an IPA or anything like that. Beers that emphasize their hop characteristics should be drunk as fresh as possible. The sorts of beers that you typically see cellared are beers that emphasize malts more. So you're talking about imperial stouts and barley wines and strong ales. Those are the kind of beers that go into the beer cellar. And then, of course, the final thing to remember about cellaring beers is it's an ongoing process, so you need to have a plan to be able to sample your beer as it progresses to make sure it's aging in a way that you like. So in other words, if you think you want to cellar a beer, you don't typically buy just one bottle of it. You'd buy several and plan on sampling a bottle every 6 months to a year, depending on the strength of the beer and how long you think you're going to cellar it. You want to make sure that you drink the beer when it's at its peak. If you only buy one bottle and you wait too long when you open the beer, if it's deteriorated because it's aged too long, you're going to be very disappointed. If you're interested in cellaring beers, I strongly recommend you purchase a book that's called Vintage Beer by a man named Patrick Dawson. It's only a $12, $13 paperback. It's available on Amazon, but it is the best book out there that I've ever read on cellaring beer. It goes in all the ins and outs, talks about what happens in the beer. So that's my best advice. If you think you might want to cellar beer, get a copy of that book. But if all you're doing is looking to store your beer, as I said, just remember, keep it dark, keep it cold, and it'll stay as fresh as possible. Hope that answers your question. This is Bill Howell, drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL FM 91.9 Kenai.
Beers of Alaska, beer on the last frontier. Beers of Alaska, learn about them here. Beers of Alaska.
Well, that's about it for today's show. Here's our closing quote to think about for this month. Beer, if drunk with moderation, softens the temper, cheers the spirit, and promotes health. Thomas Jefferson. If you've got any ideas or suggestions or questions that you'd like to have answered here on Drinking on the Last Frontier, feel free to send them in via the KDLL Facebook page or directly to me at beerontthelastfrontier@gmail.com. This is Bill Howell wishing you a happy summer and keep drinking lots of good craft beer. See you next month.